Welcome to Ruby Rider's Pegging Paradise podcast number 78 on March 8th, 2014. Even though it is March 8th, I'm actually going to take you guys back to Valentine's Day and tell you what that was like for me. So it's always interesting being unattached on Valentine's Day. Usually I just find something else to do and it's no big deal, or occasionally I get together with girlfriends or something like that. This year, there was so much going on that I actually really had to laugh because I was almost unaware of the significance of the day. I was on Facebook and a friend of mine was jokingly posting about how she was offended because clearly her Facebook status listed her as married and yet she was getting invitations to join dating sites and she thought that was in poor form. Somebody replied and commented about something, and she said, well, you know, come Friday, we'll see if I'm still married. Now, what she was talking about was Valentine's Day came on a Friday this year. So the implication there, of course, was that if her husband didn't come through in some manner and recognize this holiday, that she would divorce him, which of course was a joke. But I so didn't get it because I sort of forgot the significance of Valentine's Day. I mean, I had a whole bunch of things planned. But I got on that thread and I said, wait, what's happening? What's happening on Friday? And she said, okay, this is a rhetorical question, right? Because we're talking 2:14 here. And then it clicked and I went, oh, okay, got it. It just goes to show how not in the groove of relationship stuff I am right now. Okay, so what happened on Valentine's Day? Valentine's Day was a wild day. Valentine's Day in the evening had all kinds of stuff going on for me. The main event was Body Storytelling. And this was the one-year anniversary of Body Storytelling Los Angeles. Miss Dixie De La Tour has brought down this amazing event from San Francisco, and it happens in Los Angeles once a month. You guys have heard me talk about it before, and it's one of my favorite things to go to. And I did the whole Craigslist date thing, and I got a history here with Body Storytelling. I did get up twice and tell a story in the Story Slam. I did not win either time, and I have resisted the urge to get up and tell since then. Sometimes because I haven't prepared, but also because I kind of wanted to just observe and see what the magic was. What was the element that really made it work? What was the thing that captured the audience? And the more I listened, and every month when I went, the magic did seem to be vulnerability. It seemed to be when you let the audience in to your vulnerability and your personal interior in a very exposed and vulnerable way, they responded. So Miss Dixie De La Tour called me up and asked me if I would be willing to tell a story on Valentine's Day. And I said, yes. Now, this means I'm one of the curated stories. Now, the good news there is that I get 10 minutes instead of 5 minutes. And the bad news is everybody expects me to tell a better story, right? And Dixie has this amazing method of storyboarding. Some of you in the film industry or related to the film industry or just having, you know, come across it before, may have heard about storyboarding. Well, she uses this method for storytelling, and it's remarkable. She offered several times to work with me on my story, and I was really busy. Plus, probably there was a fair amount of reluctance on my part to work with the infamous Miss De La Tour. And so I just kind of pulled it all together myself. But I tell you, that storyboard was invaluable to me. She told me how to use it. She sent me the email and it had directions on how to use it. So I figured out my story myself. I practiced it over and over and over. I ran into traffic driving down to Los Angeles, which is not unusual. When I drive down there, If there's no traffic, it's an hour and 15 minutes, but because of the timing of the day and the LA traffic, usually it takes me about an hour and 45, sometimes 2 hours to get there. So I had a lot of opportunity to practice that 10-minute story over and over and over and over again, and I'd done a lot of practicing anyway. So I was pretty convinced that I had it down. And I wrote and told Dixie exactly that. Now, what I forgot to mention here is that shortly after she asked me to tell the story, she asked me if I would be willing to do part of a strap-on fashion show at the break. Now, first, to make this all make sense, okay, the theme of the night was bottoms up, tales of alcohol, anal, and submission. So, like, take your choice, right? Because all of that could mean bottoms up. Well, you know, I'm like the anal queen here, practically. So that was one of the reasons they asked me to tell the story, Dixie did. And she asked Tantus to provide some lovely strap-ons and dildos, and she asked other people, including me, to be part of a strap-on fashion show. It was a kick and a half. Sex Nurse Sandra was there, and oh my god, she played the crowd for all it was worth. She came out sort of looking all innocent, and just, I was so amazed watching her. She totally played it up and flirted with Dixie while Dixie was reading her part with Sandra up there. There were three other women who took part in the fashion show with Sandra and I, and they all looked so incredibly gorgeous. We had a lot of fun up there on the stage. And here was the surprise that I was hit with as soon as I got to body storytelling. Dixie told me that the man who had been scheduled in between the strap-on fashion show and my story had actually canceled. Well, what this meant was that I would have no time to change back into regular clothes and tell my story. And so I just took a deep breath and decided that it was totally okay to wear that strap on and stand in front of that microphone and tell my story. So that's exactly what happened. And it was an interesting sensation to be up there on stage. I wore patterned pantyhose and some nice lace-edged boy shorts underneath the incredibly beautiful strap-on harness that Tantus provided. It was one of their connoisseur harness line, and they had previously given me one of those, and it's called the Amazon. It's incredibly beautiful. The leatherwork on it is exquisite. This one is called the Black Widow, and it's like a spider web. It's so beautiful. And it's black and red, and the dildo they provided was a red dildo sticking out of it. I believe the model was an Echo. So it looked really, really hot, and it was fun, and I had on a corset up top and just a black jacket. And if you'd like to see a picture of me wearing that, you can look on my Facebook page. The Facebook page of Ruby Riders Pegging Paradise does have a picture of me at that show. It's a little blurry, but you absolutely get the idea. So we did the fashion show. It was really, really fun. And then I got up there and I told my story. Now, there had been already a few other people who had told their curated stories, and then we had a musical break, fashion show, and I told my story. The story I told, I'm actually going to attach to the end of this podcast. It's a story about Zach. You all who have been listening for a while are familiar with this name because it comes up a little bit here and there. This is a man that I have been writing erotic emails back and forth with for some time. I actually looked it up, and it's been a couple of years. Perhaps not consistently, but been a big influence, this guy. He's been a muse. We have written stories together, and we've exchanged a lot via email. we actually met. And this is a story about how we initially made contact, and then what happened when we met, and some other things in between. So I think you'll enjoy it. I'm going to put it at the end of this podcast. So this was an interesting story to tell because other people told a bunch of different stories, and some of them were funny and some of them were a little bizarre, and this one was actually very poignant. There is a piece that I posted on my blog called Zach's First Beating. This is exactly what happened from his point of view, in his words, when we actually met each other. So what was the vulnerability part? You know, what was the magic that captured the audience? How did I manage that? Well, that wasn't really too difficult because Zach represents one of very, very few times in my life where I have compromised my integrity. This man's married, and I'm not proud of it, but it's there, and it's even awkward to talk about, obviously, as I bring it up, because I don't compromise my integrity easily. It's something I'm really proud of. So when this happened in my life, it gave me a lot of really good perspective so that I don't judge other people harshly when they find themselves in a similar situation and they write in and tell me, like, for example, they write in and tell me, well, I know that my wife would never accept this whole pegging idea because she's incredibly conservative and she always has been, and that's just the way she is. So I went off and experienced pegging with someone else. Previous to my involvement with Zach, I had judged people like that harshly who wrote in with stories similar to that. And now I really don't. And I can't really justify it. The only thing I can say is that sometimes it just feels like you have to go down that path. I told my sister about this, and she said, I can't relate because I can't recall ever running into anything in my life that I couldn't say no to. And it's an interesting point of view. Zach is someone I couldn't say no to, and it wasn't him particularly in terms of, what I mean by that is it wasn't him convincing me and luring me and, you know, trying to persuade me. It wasn't that at all. Both of us were very aware that we were violating our moral code, basically. But at the same time, the path itself, the coming together, the connection that we made, the revealing of deeper layers, the stories that we wrote together, the fantasies we shared, that path did feel like it was just supposed to happen. And sure, could I have walked away? Absolutely. But I didn't. And so this MP3 that I'm going to put on at the end of this podcast, attached to the end, is the story pretty much exactly how I told it at Body Storytelling. What I did was record this, and I sent it to him to make sure that anonymity was intact, so to speak, that I wasn't giving away too many details that he was not comfortable with. And he was fine with it, so I told the story. And a fair number of people there were actually in tears when I finished it. And that's quite a compliment for a storyteller, when you can move people to emotion, whether it be happiness or tears. It's really quite a compliment. So that was part of my Valentine's Day, that event, and I really enjoyed the entire thing. That was one of the few times that I've been up on stage in front of that many people where it just flowed pretty easily, and I really wasn't nervous at all. I was more nervous having that strap on as opposed to getting up there and telling the story I was very prepared for. And after I told this story, I did go back into the green room and change back into normal clothes. And I went to the back of the room at Busby's, which is where this event is held. And I got a drink. And this man came up to me and said, were you just on stage? Are you Ruby? Did you just tell this story? And I said, yes. And he said, can I give you a hug? It was the sweetest thing. And part of the reason he did that was because I talked about emotion a fair amount in conjunction with Zach, and you'll just have to listen to the end of the story, to the end of the podcast to hear the story, to know what I mean. But again, that was an amazing compliment. I was a little floored and really thankful. And this whole body storytelling thing, this is such an amazing community of people that even though it was Valentine's Day, even though I'm single, even though I got a couple of texts, a couple of emails from guys saying happy Valentine's Day, there's really no one special right now. You know, that was a really, really nice day for me. That was an exceptional day. I so enjoyed it. And that's not usually something I can say for a holiday that emphasizes being a couple, that single people sort of are kind of lost amidst all of that couple celebration crap, you know? I mean, it's a manufactured holiday. It emphasizes being a couple. And so, you know, what if you're single? It's like, well, fuck me. I don't have a partner. What do you do on Valentine's Day? Do you stay home and be sad? Well, obviously I didn't. In fact, that was one of the best body storytelling events I've been to. Maybe because my ego is stroked a little bit being up there on stage. But also because I had so much fun going to that event, modeling the strap on, doing what I love, telling a story that was real and full of emotion and from my heart, really, because that's the only kind of stories that you can tell at body storytelling are real ones. You can't make up a story. It has to be something that really happened. So all of those things together and being with my tribe and the sex educators and all the people I know there, my friends, it was extraordinary. I had such a great time. So how do I really feel about being single? Let's transition into that. Because it's been about almost a month since Valentine's Day. And I've thought about this for some time. I really have. How I feel about being single. It's really an interesting time for me right now. Because when I first got into speaking about pegging, teaching about it, becoming a little bit of a public figure as Ruby, I realized, and I was also told by friends of mine, that this would narrow my choices of available men in my life. And this has come to be true. There have been a couple of men I've been interested in, and we've dated a couple of times, and then all of a sudden they back out. And the reason that they give me is because they really sat down with the whole idea of, okay, if I'm going to date this woman, basically her world revolves a lot around strap-on sex, pegging, and teaching about it, and talking about it, and writing about it. And do they really want all of their friends and family to know that they like to get fucked up the ass? That's what it comes down to, really. Now, obviously, discretion can be used. Obviously, discretion can be part of your life. And you don't have to start dating this guy. And then as soon as you guys decide you're a couple, you go to announce to all of his friends and his family that you fuck him up the ass. This is ridiculous, right? It may feel that vulnerable and that scary to guys, but please, discretion is an option. On the other hand, should everything kind of open up unexpectedly one day by someone finding out things on the internet, hearing things, a slip of an email to the wrong address, things like this. Who I date has to be okay with the possibility that they may be outed as someone who likes to get fucked up the ass, right? And this is a little tough. I mean, just today, literally today, I got an email from a man that I dated a couple of times. I liked pretty much everything about him. And initially, if there's any possibility of long-term relationship material, and it's not just a friend with benefits and fun time, I always bring that up on the very first date. Now, you do realize what I do, how much I'm in the public, how I speak, and I do all this stuff, and are you okay with dating a woman who is known as being like a total pegging expert, aficionado, whatever you want to call it. Other people have used the E word, which is the expert word, but I felt a little funny with that coming out of my mouth right now. Anyway, are you okay with that? And initially, a lot of times I say, oh yeah, sure, I don't care. I don't care what people think. But then when it comes down to the reality, sometimes they do care. Yeah, that hurts a little bit. On the other hand, I'd rather have them tell me about it than pull out later when we'd actually become more intimate and involved emotionally. So it's good that they pulled back at before things got too close. But this whole thing about fearing what people will think about your own sexual interests and desires is a much, much bigger subject. It truly is. I know it's a big part of men deciding that they're interested in exploring pegging. And we could go down that whole road about, oh, gay, anal, blah, blah, blah. But it's a symptom of a much bigger picture. And the much bigger picture is that we're all stuffed into these little boxes by society that are dictated to us, that are prescribed for us, and that do not fucking fit. And here's what I mean by that. We are all so different. If there's one thing that exploring the world of sexuality has taught me, it's that we are all so different. If I were to go on a website that had a number of women who enjoy pegging and found 10 other women who enjoy pegging and asked them all what they enjoy about it, how they do it, what particularly they like the best, we'd all be a little different. Sure, there's similarities, but that's the thing, is that we're all so different, and what we like is different. What turns us on is different. So what puzzles me and also brings me a fair amount of dismay is how unwilling society has been so far to really let loose and open up and accept things that are out of that little prescribed box. It's very, very frustrating, and it's also hurtful. And at this point in time, let me read you a really interesting quote I came across by Aldous Huxley, of all people. And although I don't think that he intended this quote to mean sexually, when I read it, you'll see how it absolutely applies here. Here we go. The real hopeless victims of mental illness are to be found among those who appear to be most normal. Many of them are normal because they are so well adjusted to our mode of existence, because their human voice has been silenced so early in their lives that they do not even struggle or suffer or develop symptoms as the neurotic does. They are normal not in what may be called the absolute sense of the word. They are normal only in relation to a profoundly abnormal society. Their perfect adjustment to that abnormal society is a measure of their mental sickness. These millions of abnormally normal people living without fuss in a society to which, if they were fully human beings, they ought not to be adjusted. Oh man, if that doesn't just shout out about how fucked up society's attitudes towards sexuality is, I don't know what does. And because I teach about and write about and am passionate about something that is quite edgy and quite taboo for a lot of people, I mean, I feel so fortunate to live on the West Coast. I feel so fortunate to live in a group of people where I am rarely judged. A lot of it is who I surround myself with, but I can't even imagine living in the Midwest, living in a very conservative area of this country or of this world, and trying to do what I do, trying to write what I write, trying to spread the word about pegging like I do. So this has become more and more of a focus for me lately. there's so much shame about our sexual desires. There's so much that is so very hidden in so very many of us. And it creates this really kind of desperate undercurrent of sexuality that can be really disturbing sometimes. Okay, let's circle back around here. I mentioned Zach. Zach loves anal play. Zach loves pegging. Zach has not told this to anyone. He has not approached anyone about this. He certainly has not told anyone in his community about his love of anal play for fear he will be severely judged. He works in a very macho field. He's a cop. So this is one of those situations where what you really desire is so at odds with society's impression of what you must be according to your desires, and that's so filled with judgment that it just drives people crazy. And I really think that this is why the porn that is produced for mass consumption is so bad. I mean, okay, that's a blanket statement. But you people that watch it, like me, you know it's bad. I run across so little porn that's good. I'm pretty much hooked on the amateur stuff because the other stuff is so bad. Now, you know, porn producers, they don't go out and do a study and say, hey, what do you guys want to see? They kind of do guesswork and put it out there and put out there what sells. Well, I don't know how much experimenting they do, but people who have fit themselves in this little box, who have not told their community, who have not told their partner, and who have this desperate longing to experience these desires, is this, you know, well, I don't want to say a suitable outlet, but is it an effective outlet for you to find some porn that expresses at least part of what you desire and watch that? Sometimes I think it's the only outlet. Sometimes I think that's why porn sells so well, is because society is saying, no, that's not okay to be that way. And porn is saying, you want to be that way? We'll give you movies that show you all about it. They're not good movies, but really it's one of the few things out there that can speak to that longing and that desire. And so many of these desires, they don't hurt anybody. They're consensual. They're perfectly fine things to do between two consenting adults, or three or four, depending on what your fantasies are. So, I don't know, I've been thinking a whole lot about this lately. I just wish that there were more people who could take a deep breath and grant their partner more acceptance when their partner reveals some sort of sexual desire, even if it is not a desire that they wish to engage in, even if it is a desire that they would never, ever want to do themselves. What's really happening, said it before and I'll say it a million more times, what's really happening if your partner comes to you and asks you for something sexually, or tells you about a sexual fantasy they have, or explains how they really, really desire to experience this new sexual thing, what is really happening is that they are revealing a deeper layer of themselves, and it is a gift for you. It is truly a gift. They are allowing you to see their deeper layers, and that's always a gift, even if those deeper layers are not something you really appreciate as much as they would like you to. It's still a gift, because any time your partner allows you to see a deeper layer, it can increase the intimacy between you. You know each other better. So let's say he comes to you and says, I really want to do pegging, and you're totally not into it. That's okay. Now you know something more about that man. Now you know that this is an area of his body that he likes having stimulated, and it's possible, even if you're not into the pegging, that you might like toys or you might like fingers. And if you don't want to do that, it's possible that you would buy him porn that's pegging porn. It's possible that you have a marriage that's open so that even if you don't want to do the pegging, you're totally fine with him going and finding another partner to do it, or bringing that partner home and do a threesome. I mean, I could go on and on here. What I'm trying to make a point about is that there's a lot of choices. It's not a black and white thing, like the man coming to his wife and saying, or partner, and saying, I'm really into pegging, I want to try this, and she either embraces it or flips out. Mm-mm, not black and white, not at all. And I think the best bridge, if you will, to get from the point of your partner coming to you and saying, let's use the present example, I like pegging and I want to explore this with you, to wherever you guys end up, the best bridge there is to actually take a deep breath and know that this is a gift. Embrace the fact that it's a gift. Thank your partner for that gift. Appreciate that gift. Appreciate the vulnerability and the courage it took for this person to come to you and reveal that deeper layer, especially because it's a deeper layer that is often really harshly judged by society. This is something else I've been thinking about, and I'm in a talky mood tonight. I'm not reading any letters. I am just talking, and I hope you're enjoying it. What I want to talk about now is how any types of desires and fantasies that men have that are not strictly in line with a male fantasy, a typical male fantasy, and I just mean literally the male part of it, that those are the ones that are usually the hardest for not only society to accept, but also partners. For example, if you're a man and you have this total fantasy of dominating woman, getting a little rough with her, throwing her around, tying her up, fucking her, that's pretty well accepted, okay? But if you are a man who has fantasies of being tied up, of being fucked, of being thrown around a little bit, that is judged much more harshly. And that's because the box for men, that proscribed box, has inherent in it masculine, typically, stereotypically, masculine or male qualities. And that means the men have to be in control. They have to appear strong. They never can appear vulnerable or weak. They never can appear feminine. And that's the box that men have to live in sexually. That's one of the boxes. So women tend to fall for this, kind of. And when I say fall for this, I really hope any and all of the women listening out there stop and listen a little more closely. Because just because your man comes to you and says, okay, here's another example, I love to wear panties. This is something Zach said to me. The fact that this man likes to wear women's panties, does this in any way affect how intensely masculine he is, how good at his job he is, how strong he is, how capable he is of rescuing people and being an amazing person in times of emergency and all the things that his job requires? No, doesn't affect it one fucking bit. Now, there's always personal preference. If you're a woman who just can't stand any sense or hint of femininity with your man, then you are what you are, and we all like what we like. And I'm not telling you to change your mind about it. I guess what I'm trying to do is encourage you to open your mind a little bit, just to see what that's like, because what I have found is that when I open my mind like that, things that I previously thought I would not be turned on by, I'm still not intensely turned on by, but here's what turns me on. What turns me on is the fact that my partner is turned on by it. Now, I talked about this a while back. I thought I would never, ever be a woman who enjoyed having a man suck on my strap-on. It's like, what is the fucking point? I can't feel it. It looks stupid. He's sucking on something that's not real, blah, blah, blah. These are the things that went through my mind, right? I don't know how much they were affected by porn, because a lot of porn stuff, you know, she's like deep throating the guy and he's choking on it and blah, blah, blah. I don't really know. But suffice to say, I had some pretty strong opinions about it. It's like, yeah, that so doesn't get me off. As a matter of fact, it kind of turns me off. So then enter a while ago, Mr. Great Kisser, right? Now, Mr. Great Kisser, while we were together, explored a bit of his bisexuality. And because of that, once he did that and had a lovely experience up at Pride Festival up in San Francisco of giving this guy a blowjob, right? Came back, told me all about it. It was very, very hot. He was so excited. In fact, he was sweet enough to tell me, you know, if I didn't know you and hadn't been encouraged by you to be so open about my sexuality, that never would have happened. So he had a lot of thanks for me that I encouraged him to pursue what turned him on. So when we got back together and he told me all about it, well, the next time that we got together and he actually got down on his knees and put his mouth on my strap-on and started sucking it, that was a whole new deal, man. So I tell you that story as an example. I never thought I would be a woman who got turned on by that. But just the thought of that, watching him do it, thinking about his past experience, oh yeah, it was a fucking turn on. So I encourage you to have an open mind. You know, there's that silly thing. It's kind of silly and it's kind of not, that people sometimes say about, you know what, I'll try anything twice or maybe even three times just to be sure I don't like it. Well, that's one way to look at it, and I kind of like that way. Also, though, have an open mind. Just check it out and see what it's like, because sometimes the pure pleasure that your partner is deriving from doing the act that they love to do, no matter what it is, may be enough to kick you over that line from kind of going, eh, I'm not really negative about this, but at the same time, it just is such a non-turn-on that it's not turning me on at all. It just sort of leaves me cold. It leaves me sort of, eh. It can change that. It can change your experience from that to something that actually gives you a bit of spark, gives you a bit of excitement because your partner is so excited by what they're doing, by maybe the history that it connects with, like Mr. Great Kisser, or something like that. So I really, really encourage you all out there. Try acceptance. Just try it and see what happens. Open up the communication lines and talk about it. And if your partner actually has the courage to come to you and tell you about a deeper layer of their sexuality, say thank you. The very, 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 very first thing you say is thank you so much for telling me this. Because it's a gift. It's a total gift. Okay, what else did I want to talk about? I wanted to tell you about, let's see. Ah, I remember. I wanted to tell you about my experience with a group. First, it originated with a group that I got involved with down in Los Angeles called Sex Positive LA. Now, there's recently been a group branched off from that group, or in addition to it, just a separate one up in the area where I live, which is near Ventura. So, I have been going to a few events. Now, Sex Positive is on what's called meetups, like M-E-E-T-U-P-S, meetups. And meetups.com is just basically a way to get together with people who have the same interests you do. You can pretty much find a group for anything you like, probably basket weaving and hiking and cooking and you name it. But I was really delighted to find the Sex Positive groups. So with this one that newly formed up in my area, I was trying to participate as much as I could. And there were a lot of things going on, and it was so fun to be a part of. The Sex Positive groups, what they do, and these don't just happen in LA and where I live, they're all over the place. In fact, I posted something about the meetup groups on Facebook, and I got a response saying, yeah, well, that's not happening where I live. Well, on Facebook, many times, if the people have left that information there, you can tell where they live. And this woman lived near London. And I found out that there was a meetup group there where she lived. Now, what she was responding to was my description about going to a pajama snuggle party. Oh my God. I love touch. I love cuddling. I love stroking. I love just snuggling and being together and touching. And the pajama snuggle party was pretty remarkable. The meetup sex positive group has a structure that allows for safe touching and safe experiencing of that sort of, you know, snuggling and stuff like that. And without going into the details of it, what it did was create a container where everybody could feel safe to say yes or no. And that even if your response to someone asking you something like, can I stroke your shoulders? Can I rub your shoulders? Can I stroke your hair? Can, you know, I snuggle up to you and spoon you? Anything that someone might be asking you, if the first thing you did was hesitate, then it was your responsibility to say no. The only kind of yeses that that group was interested in was a hell yes. Well, that made it so much easier to trust the yeses. And I could just talk about this for a really long time, but this podcast has gone on for a while, and I also need to tack on that 10-minute talk at the end of it, which was the story that I told about Zach, so I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail about it. But what I will say is that I left that evening so completely satisfied as far as my touch needs, my love of being touched and being next to someone and touching them. And some of these were people that I knew. I didn't know them really, really well, but I knew them from other events. And some of them were people I had just met that night. It was remarkable the level of trust that that structure allowed. So anybody who is interested in something like this, which I highly recommend, I can't recommend it highly enough, look up meetups.com and find out if there is a group in your area. There is a woman named Gabriela Cordova who has started this whole thing, and she has gone from city to city creating new sex-positive groups. And there's, you know, there's other things that these groups do, and really they all have a bit of a life of their own. We've had meetings talking about relationship structure, like monogamish or monogamy or poly or swingers, and where people saw themselves in those definitions, within those definitions. We've had meetups to talk about any subject that people had questions about. They brought me in as someone who was really knowledgeable about pegging. So, yeah, check out sex positive meetups and see if there's a group in your area, and I really, really highly recommend it. The pajama snuggle party was something that, if I'm honest with myself, oh my God, I love touch, and I would like to do that once a week. I really, really, really would. There was one very organic sort of moment that happened between myself and three other people where we were taking turns being the person who was getting attention. And if you were the person who was the focus and you were getting the attention, you would lay on your back and put your head in somebody's lap. That person would sit there and stroke your hair and your face and just caress you. And the other two people of this foursome would run their hands over your legs and your arms and your body. And that much focus, that much touch was just exquisite. I could have lived there for a long time. We all could have. And it was important for all four of us to experience being the person who was the focus point. It's pretty remarkable having that many people touch you in a gentle, non-sexual, okay, get that part, because that's important. That's what allows safety in this precise situation. There are meetups that are more sexually oriented, but this one in particular, was not supposed to have a sexual quotient. Should you, as a man or woman, start to feel all sexually excited, like maybe cozying up to someone, spooning, what have you, it was your responsibility to politely disengage. So feeling yourself as the focus of three other people running their hands over your body in a non-sexual and loving and caressing way was pretty damn cool. It was exquisite. It was lovely. It was blissful. Check that out. Meetups.com, sex positive groups. And I'm going to post, of course, the links to those things on my Linkorama. What else have I talked about that I'm going to post the links for? Body storytelling. Absolutely. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Well, the last thing I think of is I'm also going to post the link for Catalyst Con East, because that is coming right up. And the last thing I'm going to tell you in this podcast, because I'm not going to read any letters this time, is about this really exciting thing. You may have remembered that I got a very large donation from someone for the end of my fundraising for the DC trip. Well, this person has asked me out to lunch once I get to DC. And I've sent questions and said, have we talked before? Because, you know, I'm all over the internet, and sometimes I'm on websites where people have screen names, and then if they make a donation and it's in their PayPal name or however they pay it, you know, I don't know who this person is. I have no idea whether or not their screen name and their real name are the same person. So I questioned him and asked, you know, have we talked before? And he said, no. We've never spoken before now. So pretty much, listeners of Ruby Rider's Pegging Paradise podcast, I have a mystery date, and I cannot wait to have lunch with this person. It's really kind of fun because I'm totally out of my element, okay? I'm going to DC. I am a born and bred California woman, okay? DC, man, they freaking dress up. Not only do they dress up, but it's cold there. Now, I know to them they're probably laughing because maybe it's not as cold as I think it is, but yeah, they dress up. So here is my guess, okay? My guess is that this man is going to show up in a suit. And I'll let you know if I'm right once I come back from Catalyst Con. My other assumption is that the level of, I don't even know what to say. It's not formal dress because it's not formal, but the level to which people will be much more tailored and dress more exactingly and fashionably is going to be far higher than I am used to being a native Californian. So I've been doing a little shopping and we'll see what I come up with, and I'm sure it'll be fine. But yeah, I'm just a little bit intimidated, just a little bit. I asked a friend of mine, so what do you do when you go to a really nice place and it's really cold out? I mean, how do you deal with that? And she said, you dress the same way you would normally in California, but you just put a big coat on. And when you get there, they take the coat and you go in the restaurant and you are dressed pretty much the same as you might be in California. But I don't know. To me, DC is like the land of suits. So I have to find something to wear that's going to, you know, equal the suit situation. And of course, I'm also really looking forward to Catalyst Con because I get to do the ass panel again. Now, I talked to Lucas Brooks finally. What a delightful man he is. We had a lovely conversation, and I'm totally confident he is going to add some way cool things to the ass panel to make it a little bit different, a little more exciting, and just have a little bit different of a twist this time around because Lucas Brooks is replacing Charlie Glickman. So I've got Lucas Brooks, I have Tom Stewart, the owner of Sportsheets International, and then C.T. Shank, who is CEO of Aneros. So those three are going to be on the ass panel. And we're going to have a blast. Now, one of the things I'm very thankful for is that this time I got scheduled on Saturday, which means when I am done with that panel on Saturday, it is party time. It is relax and enjoy time. Last time with Catalyst Con West, my panel was not until almost the end of the entire conference. So because I'd never moderated a panel before, not even been on one, much less moderated one, I kind of obsessed about it and wasn't able to enjoy the rest of the conference as much. I'd like to think that with a little experience under my belt, that I'm going to be able to relax a little bit more this time. But regardless, it's going to be a fabulous adventure to go to DC and do this. So I want to thank every single person who donated. And I want to thank every single person who's listening and who cares about me spreading the word about pegging. This is not something that is dinner conversation. I've also said that before, and I'll say it a million times again. I understand that this is not something you can jump up and tell your neighbors about, or your friends, or your family. So here I am, trying to spread the word about how amazing this sexual experience can be, and all of the things that it offers. So thank you for being my support system, whether it's because you download and listen from iTunes, or whether you've sent me money, or you're a subscriber from my erotica, or whether you go to my website and you click on my affiliate links and buy some lovely sex toys. Thank you. Thank you all so much. One of the things I wanted to tell you about, by the way, and I'm still waiting to get mine, but I am quite confident it's going to be an amazing toy, is Tantus has made, recently, they have released paddles, and they're silicone paddles. So if you could imagine, you know, they've got this nice whip to them, and one of the paddles that they make, which totally captured my imagination, and I'll tell you why, and you'll see why. It's called the plunge. It's kind of shaped like a ping pong paddle, but the handle of it is a dildo. Now, in my world, that just creates so many possibilities. I can't even begin to tell you about it. And part of the reason I start to stammer and I can't tell you about it is because I'm freaking squirming in my chair. Yeah. Jenna, who works at Tantus, is going to send me one of those once their production gets up to par, and I cannot wait. And so great. And I'm going to have the paddle, and then there's the issue of who do I use it on? Well, all I'm going to say about that is, don't worry about me. I keep busy. And I'll leave the details about that for some other time, or perhaps not at all. And I know that's a fucking tease, right? Okay, at this point in time, I am going to play you the story that I told about Zach. But first, I'm going to sign off here. You can leave your questions at 805-500-6544. And even if you don't leave your questions, call me up. I'm getting lonely at this number, you guys. I swear to God. You could follow me on Twitter at @Ruby_writer. I have a Facebook page and a profile. A thumbs up on the page would be awesome. And you can find that picture I spoke about on both the page and the profile, which are public, Ruby Writer and Ruby Writer's Pegging Paradise. That would be the picture of me wearing the strap on up on stage at Body Storytelling, right? My podcast is available on iTunes and can also be listened to directly from my blog at peggingparadise.com. And if you want to go to iTunes and rate my podcast and give me a cool review, that would be totally awesome. My stories are now available on Amazon Kindle. So you can go to the Amazon Kindle store and you can purchase my stories individually. You can also go to my website, and I sell subscriptions for those erotica stories. And there are different levels of subscription, and right now the I Want It All subscription, which costs $50 a year, I believe has an archive of 36 or 38 stories, somewhere like that, and then you'll get a story a month for a year. It's a fucking lot of stories for $50, I tell you. Please send all your questions and your stories to Ruby at PeggingParadise.com, or you can click the right Ruby links at the upper right of every page on my blog. Thank you all for downloading and listening, and happy pegging. So I've been a healer for 26 years of my life, and I've only been an ass fucker and an ass beater for 6 of those years. But this is a story about when all 3 of those converged one day. I initially met Zach when I sent in an erotic pegging story to Reddit. He saw it, he messaged me, and told me it really turned him on that he'd always fantasized about pegging, and it was something he wanted to try but hadn't, and if I had any desire to be his first. He was 6'2", blonde hair, blue eyes, built, in the military, and a cop. So I replied politely that if he really wanted to meet me, he needed to go to FetLife and create himself a profile and send me a proper letter of introduction, but that I was glad he enjoyed the story. And I went on about my way that day, but that night, before I went to bed, I was thinking about his description, and this intense cougar fantasy totally unfolded itself in my mind, and I totally got off on it. So right before I faded off to sleep, I thought, that is a good story. I should write that as a story. So it's exactly what I did the next morning. I wrote it down, made it an erotic story. And whenever that happens, when someone inspires a story, I send them a copy of it and thank them. And that's exactly what I did with Zach, since I had his email. I warned him that the attached story was 5,000 words, and it likely would speak directly to his fantasies, and that he probably should read it in private. Zach received that email from me when he was on a military training weekend, and he was sleeping in a barracks with a bunch of guys all around him in a bunk. So the privacy thing was not happening, and he couldn't resist himself and read the story anyway. But thankfully, he had developed this talent of masturbating really quietly, and that served him well that night. So that's where our connection began. Our emails started flying back and forth, and his fantasies really revolved a lot around longing to give up control and wanting me to completely possess him. So the more we wrote, the closer we became, and I was totally ready to drive down to Southern California, where he lived, and initiate this young man into the pleasures of pegging, because for me, that fantasy of the whole macho man's man dude, the alpha, letting down all the walls and becoming vulnerable and giving up control, that fantasy is like crack for me, okay? I live for that. So I was ready, like I said, to drive down there, and then he disappeared, just like that. And you know, that happens on the internet sometimes. So I went on about my life, and a year went by, and then I was cleaning out my inbox, and I saw an email from him, so I sent a quick email and just hoped that he was well. And he responded. He responded with a sheepish, "Yeah, I'm married." And you know what? Fuck me if I so did not see that coming. I so did not see it coming. And we started talking again a little bit, but he was persistent in wanting to have a connection with me. But this was a compromise in my integrity. See, I will have conversations with men who have partners about sexuality, but not when it's a personal fantasizing about me thing. That's crossing my line. Now, coincidentally, about that point in time, there was a podcast that I did where a couple of men had written in, and they had basically broken their promises to their partners and went off and had their initial pegging experiences, one with a pro and one with another woman. And I judged them for that on my podcast. I said, you know, you guys made a promise. It's really not okay. So you know what happens when you do judgment. The universe throws that right back at you, and all of a sudden you're on the other side of things. So there I was, faced with a decision of having this connection, and if I did, it was going to basically violate my moral code. But the connection won. And we continued talking and sharing. Just words on a screen, emails, but we started sharing our deeper layers. And a couple of the things that were really significant that Zach shared with me was his first bisexual experience. First and only. during which he decided that he didn't really like men necessarily that much, but he really did enjoy sucking cock. And he was blown away when I responded that I could think of nothing hotter than watching him give a guy a blowjob while I was behind him, fucking him. And then he shared with me his love of women's panties. He loves to wear women's panties. And he told me a very sad story about how he had the one girlfriend he told that fantasy to, and she convinced him to put hers on. He did so sheepishly because he was embarrassed and was like under the covers and at night and dark. And then she got behind him like she was the big spoon, and she started fingering his ass because she knew he loved anal play. And he jerked off. And it was one of the most exciting things that happened to him because it spoke directly to his fantasies. But right afterwards, she teased him unmercifully and called him gay. So he took that fantasy and shelved it away and never told anyone again until me. And he'd never told anyone about the bisexual experience. So he started reading some of the stuff on my website, and he came across the concept of being beaten until you cry. I broached that in a story that I'd written called The Beating, and he became really fascinated with that idea. It caused him to start looking at his own emotional landscape, if you will, and he realized that he came from a family that actually prided itself on not showing emotion. Plus, that attitude was reinforced a hundredfold by just being male, by being in the military, and being a cop. And he came to the conclusion that that was not healthy, not at all healthy. And I was actually the first person who came along and offered a release for those pent-up emotions. And so he really, really wanted to experience getting beat until he cried. He told me that it was an exciting prospect and it was really nerve-wracking, but he couldn't get it out of his head. Well, we'd shared so much and gotten so close at this point that it was pretty much an inevitability that we were going to meet. And I'll tell you the things that I remember about that meeting. We were waiting for the hotel room to be ready, and we were across the street at a dive bar, and we shared a drink, and the chemistry was great. The first kiss was amazing, and I reached inside my person, brought out this gift that I had for him. It was a pair of his very own panties. And I told him to go put them on. So he started to protest, and I cut him off and said, dude, figure it out. Because I thought maybe he was going to ask me, you know, what am I going to do with my underwear? But instead, he stood up, he leaned down to my ear, and he said, I thought you might ask me to do this, so I didn't wear any underwear. Kind of hard to stay one step ahead of a cop, I tell you. So when we did go over to the hotel, obviously, and we spent a long time kissing and sucking and fucking and eventually pegging. And we were taking a rest. And he was very, very open and vulnerable and ready, really. So I decided that was the perfect time for us to do this beating. And I started, mostly used a flogger and a crop. And I used what's called the stair-step approach, which means you beat the person for a while, and then you give them a break. And then you beat them, and you give them a break. This allows a release of endorphins, so they can take more and more, and that's how you escalate it until finally you're done at some point in time. And usually the person being beaten is the one that decides that. So I did the stair-step approach for quite some time, and then finally he started breathing pretty heavy, and I got a little concerned. After all, this was the very first time he'd ever been beaten. And one word came out of his mouth while I was giving him a break, and that word was more. So I started beating him again. And before too long, his shoulders started heaving, and I could see that he was starting to sob. So I put the crop down, and I climbed on the bed with him and held him in my arms and held him while he cried for some time. It was probably one of the most amazing moments that I've ever had a privilege to be a part of in my entire life. Eventually, two small words came out of his mouth. They were so quiet I almost couldn't hear them. Thank you. So, the next morning, he took his panties with him when he left, of course, and he's found a number of creative moments to wear them that he's told me about. One of my favorites was he wore them to testify in court under that lovely cop uniform. He also stores them in a little private place in his truck, so that while he's driving along, he can take them out in his hand and hold them and touch that silky fabric and remember the only time in his life when he felt completely accepted for exactly who he was.